We'll be broadcasting from The Hague, so do tune in. Special thanks to our crew here in Denver at the Open Media Foundation, Anne Thies and Tony Shawcross and Gvane Dahl, Shannon Altner, Nicole Marquez, Ivy Farr, Dana Thibault, Dennis Moynihan, and Julie Crosby. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Renee Feltz, Aaron Mate, Nermeen Sheikh, Steve Martinez, Sam Alkoff, Hani Massoud, Robbie Karen, Dina Guzder, Amy Littlefield, Anna Uzbek, Sam Riddell, Miguel Nogueira, and Flip, our engineers. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
You are listening to KBOO Portland. Stay tuned for Positively Revolting.
The Creative Music Guild, Merrillhurst University, and KBOO Community Radio are proud sponsors of a weekend residency by Mark Rabeau, May 8th and 9th at Merrillhurst University. Renowned guitarist and composer Mark Rabeau will perform a solo concert on Friday, May 8th at 8 p.m., and will lead a workshop on group-free improvisation on Saturday, May 9th from 2 to 5. The workshop is open to musicians of any experience level, and all instruments are welcome. Both events are taking place at the St. Anne's Church on the Merrillhurst campus, 17600 Pacific Highway, which is Highway 43. More information about the May 8th and 9th events featuring Mark Rabeau can be found on kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the 6th annual Abortion Access Bowl-a-thon on Sunday, April 25th at 4 p.m. at Interstate Lanes in Portland. 12 registered bowl-a-thon teams will be bowling to raise funds for the Network for Reproductive Options Abortion Fund to help make reproductive rights a reality for those who can't afford to pay for an abortion. Again, that's the Abortion Access Bowl-a-thon, Saturday, April 25th, 4 to 6 p.m. at Interstate Lanes, 6049 North Interstate in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
We bowl away our daily cares with little strikes, little spares.
What would you have instead?
This is it.
Comes a time when every second, every day, when every action, every thought will tell the world how you cast your vote.
Thank you.
Well, good morning.
And in fact, it is a good morning here at KBOO, your community radio station, KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM, or maybe KBOO.FM, wherever you might be listening. I'm Ani.
I'm Lynn.
And together we are, in fact, positively revolting. We hope you are, too. Momentarily, we will be joined by somebody. Our special super surprise.
Igor Vamos.
Of the Yes Men will be with us in studio momentarily. We have it on good assurance. The Yes Men have been the subject of 3 feature films. The Yes Men, The Yes Men Fix the World, and most recently...
They needed to make another one after they fixed the world.
Too bad. Most recently they have The Yes Men Are Revolting. I have to say I love the name of that one.
Yeah. Appropriate.
Yes. The Yes Men raise awareness of dire issues by appearing as representatives of corporations and governments and saying that things that desperately need to be said but otherwise never would be. Their webpage sort of describes it as impersonating big-time criminals in order to publicly humiliate them. They target leaders and big corporations who put profits in front of everyone else or everything else. And that is, in fact, what they do. Momentarily, again, we will be talking directly with Igor from the Yes Men. But in the meantime,
we have a little, we have a clip of what, so you can hear, in case you've been in a cave and you don't know what the Yes Men do. Here is how they took over a Chamber of Commerce, had their own Chamber of Commerce press conference, and what you can do when you have a lot of gall.
Let's just go ahead and roll the clip.
Yeah.
And this is from their latest film, The Yes Men Are Revolting. And we'll hear that now.
I'd like to introduce to you Mr. Hingo Sembra, Chamber spokesperson.
Thank you very much, Sheila. And a good day to everyone.
Breaking news right now, the Chamber of Commerce saying it will reverse its position on the climate change bill.
What we need is simply a carbon tax.
Are you here representing the U.S. Chamber of Commerce?
Yes, I am.
Okay, well, I work there, and you do not look familiar to me at all. Can I see your business card?
Can I see yours?
This guy is a fraud. He's lying.
Sir, who are you, really?
You guys the Yes Men?
Who?
Another hoax by the Yes Men.
The Yes Men?
It's a group of pranksters
known for posing as corporate execs.
My name is Fred. I'm from Halliburton.
My name is Dick Impala.
Ingo Sembra.
Barry Slithmore.
Oh, Willow Hawkmax.
The idea is to make fake announcements that say what we all know needs to happen. It's a way of getting people to talk more about the dream.
This is my exciting daily life here.
Really am sending out this press release using the UN's Wi-Fi connection.
Scientists are telling us this is the last chance to make a stent.
The Yes Men put out a fake copy of the New York Post.
So they look at it and they go, oh, we're screwed. Okay. Maybe we're used to the idea of being screwed.
The US democracy has become the best democracy money can buy.
We will put pressure on government.
They're calling for a squad car now.
Extremely wealthy entities are allowed to do whatever they want without regulation.
We're dressed as mops going to clean a bank.
We're going to meet up with the WikiLeaks people. Apparently, an intelligence company was hired by Dow Chemical to monitor us.
The forces of darkness are extremely well funded.
This is the biggest project we've ever done.
Then it all fell apart.
I was actually really annoyed that you weren't there.
Do I continue doing this activism and hope that it helps?
Mike used to manage before he was married and before he had 2 kids.
We're basically not friends.
I'm not sure what we're disagreeing about.
Nothing.
Oh.
We agree.
All right. We're launching a flotilla of 100 survivaballs against the UN. No one is expecting them.
And except for the police boats.
So go towards the machine gun and then left, and you'll be at the UN. Everything will be fine.
We are doing a direct action!
Anybody can get up and just do something.
It's not to say that doing this isn't going to result in immediate violence upon your person.
Hey, we're getting locked up now.
These things will protect us from tsunamis, from famine. The survivor ball will protect us.
It also protects you against arrest, I think. I am not really sure.
Try us at home, kids. It's fun.
Hey, and we're back live on the air, and we have with us, my gosh, we found a yes man. We went up the streets and we got one. So Mike is here today.
Yeah, and good morning, Mike.
Good morning.
Hi. Thanks for having me on.
Well, thanks for coming here at a very early hour in the morning for most of us.
And, you know, let's just sort of jump right into it. For listeners that are not familiar, they just got a little taste of what you do through that trailer from The Yes Men Are Revolting. If you could describe in your own words, though, what is The Yes Men about? What do you do?
Well, we have been impersonating people of power, captains of industry, government figures, infiltrating business events and, you know, finding speaking opportunities and presenting things to people who actually believe that we are those people. And so we present things usually in the traditions of satire, like Jonathan Swift. We do sort of funny interventions, but sometimes we also just use the opportunity where we're powerful people to announce something more utopic, like the world that we'd like to see. That's what we do. We've been doing it for 20 years almost, and we've been making films, three films now. Two films, one is coming out in June. And we just have been doing kind of creative activism. I guess that's what it amounts to.
Well, you guys are all of you. There's quite a few involved because what you do is extremely detailed. You sound really casual about it, like you just walk in with your suit. And from what I've seen in your films, there's a lot of work that goes into that day. But you guys are some of the only sort of high profile activists that always use humor. And, you know, Molly Ivins used to say, it takes a lot of beer drinking and dancing for freedom fighting. I mean, that humor and compassion are just so essential because this is a long haul that we're working on right now.
Yeah, and that's actually exactly what we've been grappling with, I think, especially the last 5 years or so, is how to balance, you know, activism with, you know, all these other things that we need to do, like making a living and and how to really look at the long haul, keep going, understand how activism works, that it does work, because you can be working on campaigns and never feel the impact that you're making because you don't see the progress. Sometimes it doesn't happen until years later, you know, but the victories do happen. And that's, you know, that's really, now that we have this hindsight of having done this for 20 years, we can see all the campaigns that we've contributed to that have won. And there's a lot. There's a lot, even in the last 20 years, despite, you know, the doom and gloom.
Right. And there's been a lot of doom and gloom. I mean, we live in fairly dire circumstance. But as you said, activism does work. And especially, you know, I think one of the things that I find most inspiring about your work and culture jamming in general is it takes activism to the area of the unexpected. And I think that we become very numbed out as a society when we sort of march up and down the square holding our placards and chanting the same slogan that may have been chanted by our you know, generation before us. You know, yeah, we don't want the war. We want a world we can live in. But to do it in the same way and expect different results is unsatisfying. And what you do is fresh and eternally, actually, always evolving in freshness. so I guess what I wanted to sort of start off with is how you came to find that style, that brand of activism, if you will. Why did you choose culture jamming as opposed to, writing proposal pieces and trying to do the traditional sort of organizing work?
Well, I think we just did it that way because it was fun, you know? It's just having more fun while doing it. We showed up at protests as well, you know, but we didn't necessarily have as good a time. I mean, sometimes you do. Sometimes it's a party, but a lot of times it's not. It's necessary, but it might not be as fun as the kind of mischief that we enjoy. So, I mean, I kind of happened into it actually here in Portland, you know, around 1990, late 80s, early 90s, and just discovered that it was also the kind of storytelling, the kind of creative, funny stories that one could make with very little resources would get reproduced in the media. So you feel suddenly like, wow, you can have a much bigger megaphone than you could if you just are even a small part of a large crowd. The problem is mobilizing a large crowd is really hard. You need a lot of people to do
Herding it. Herding kittens is just never easy, no.
Yeah, and it's great when it happens. It's amazing. It takes a lot of work. It's work that I totally admire. But, it turns out that we have a lot of fun creating these sort of more mischievous things that only require a small cell of people to create a pretty big noise. So, and you know, it's something that people like to share, especially in this age now of social media. You know, people like to retell the story, hand it around, pass it around to friends. And so we always felt like it might be a way to reach beyond the choir, especially for young people. We found that, you know, we always get email from high school students who say things like, wow, I saw this thing on the internet, or, you know, I got the free peer-to-peer version and it's amazing, and I'm really rethinking my life, you know, and that kind of thing is really rewarding because you feel like, wow, okay, it does work to have this kind, because there are a lot of prank and shows, television shows, programs, but they generally are just appealing to people's, you know, most base kind of sense of humor. And so why not appeal to that, but with some content, with, you know, it's like, that's,
well, I think there's a huge difference, prank for prank's sake, you know, humor, fun, but oftentimes those pranks target people who are already on the downside of power, whereas the traditional use of the jester, you know, is actually to poke at those in power. The use of satire is to poke at those who use their power in a way to disempower others. And that is, in fact, I think what you do brilliantly. So if you were talking about, how you have noted that there have been successes, you know, and if you could just maybe talk about a couple of the things that you've done over 20 years that you're really super proud of, that this was, this is a moment that totally worked and you've seen repercussions from it.
Well, when I think about even our new movie, right? We have a new movie called The Yes Men Are Revolting. It's not out yet. It will be in June. But
there's a Kickstarter people can go to, right?
Yeah, you can look at the Kickstarter. I mean, the Kickstarter is closed, so we can't support that anymore. But we should be able to pre-order it or something. We'll probably do something with KBOO to try to do some kind of fundraiser with you guys or something. But anyway,
we love that.
The point of my point is that, like, almost every, in hindsight, most of the actions in there actually contribute to something that is winning. The film overall is about climate change. But, for example, one of the earliest actions in the film, we, along with a group of people called the Avaaz Action Factory, impersonated the U.S. Chamber of Commerce and announced that they were going to change their position on climate change. And, I mean, our announcement was that they were going to support a carbon tax. And, you know, that was believed. It was carried by Fox News Live. There's a bunch of other outlets that then picked it up. So it spread everywhere really quickly. And then, of course, it was discovered to be untrue. But 2 weeks later, the Chamber of Commerce actually did change their position and started supporting the Waxman-Markey bill. So, and it wasn't the result of our action. It was the result of a campaign that had been going on that many different organizations and many different individuals were participating in. But we piled on at a moment when they were kind of already hammered pretty hard. And so we, you know, we had to give a little bit of an extra push and a huge like amount of media attention for an organization that usually flies kind of under the radar. So there was, you know, that's one example. Further along in the same film, we do an action with Greenpeace against Shell and their Arctic drilling program. And that was 2012. You know, of course, they were banned from going back to the Arctic after that year. And part of that was that they actually had several disasters. Both of their oil rigs ran aground. They were slapped with something like 5 felonies by the Coast Guard for, you know, lack of following regulations. So Shell did themselves in some ways, but also they had a PR disaster, and that we were playing a role in that by creating this crazy spectacle in the Space Needle. We had a launch party for Shell's, you know, Shell doesn't want a lot of people talking about what they're doing. And so we made sure to celebrate it as Shell. And anyway, it's a very weird and funny scene in the movie, but there was a temporary win on that issue where for a year they were forced not to go back in. Now they've greased the palms again and they're heading back up there. But there's a huge amount of activist attention right now focused on that. You know, the rigs are in Port Angeles now. They're going to head into Seattle. And I expect that there'll be a lot of resistance there. And actually, everybody can join in. If you can make your way up to Seattle, I'm sure there's a bus or two headed up there.
We've got the Bolt bus.
The Bolt bus.
For a couple bucks, we'll get you right up there.
Yeah. So there's a big rally on Sunday, this coming Sunday. And then there's a weekend of lots of action around May 16th, 17th. If anybody out there has kayaks.
I was going to say, aren't they going to have just a whole flotilla of kayaks to
Yes.
Are they going to try to board it?
The kayaktivists will surround. Do what they do. I don't know. I cannot divulge.
Who knows what the kayaktivists do?
Yeah.
They have their own ways.
Yeah.
So, you know, when did you guys, because you are like in the, you have press conferences, you really, when did you get that you could impersonate these people in a way that everybody would, was there a moment where everyone would believe? Because that's what... I was talking to some young kids about what interviewing you guys today, and they didn't know who the Yes Men were, but they knew who your actions. Well, remember the thing about Shell, and remember some other things. Yeah, that's so great. I love that. But when did you get that you could just do this and people would start believing you till someone comes flying up saying, "Where's your business card?"
Well, it's the first time that we went and did it. I think that we realized we'd be allowed to do it. And that was back in 2000 or 1999. We went to a international trade law conference in Salzburg, Austria. We had a website that looked like the WTO's, and strangely, people didn't really read it. They just emailed us and asked us to show up at their conferences and events. We agreed to go. I mean, we agreed to send somebody from the WTO, us. And then, you know, we showed up. And the first time we did it, we thought that we were just going to get kicked out. We thought that it was a bit like throwing a pie in someone's face. And we prepared a speech and a PowerPoint presentation that was, you know, pretty offensive. Like, it had a few offensive facts in it that the WTO was trying to introduce that we were proposing, like outlawing the siesta in Spain because it gets in the way of work.
I was going to say, you basically sort of promoted the idea that slavery wasn't such a bad thing.
That was part of, you know, part of what we were suggesting. And actually it's, you know, unfortunately that part of what was being suggested wasn't necessarily untrue.
Yeah, too far.
That was at a slightly mm-hmm. different presentation. The first one that we did, we actually suggested opening a free market and democracy by allowing people to sell their votes directly to companies instead of this vastly inefficient campaign finance system that we've got today. And so that one, actually, we didn't get kicked out. and they still thought we were the WTO. Nothing we could say could shake people of their belief in us, because we were introduced as the most powerful people in the room, the WTO.
And you had good suits.
We had suits. They needed our business cards. We'd borrowed suits from a friend's dad. You know, we were in Austria and none. that was maybe the only time we had really good suits. But yeah, then later we kept doing it, and we went to another conference on textiles in Finland, and there, yeah, we were talking about how, you know, the like slavery, in a sense with slavery, you know, workers had to be looked after because they were the property of, you know, you had to make sure that they stayed healthy, or you wanted them healthy.
Well, sure.
You know? Whereas, you know, with the remote labor system with sweatshops all around the world, there's always somebody else there, you know, to take the job. So you can treat people really badly, maybe arguably worse, you know,
yeah.
Which is, I mean, it's a horrible idea. but it's one that, you know, we use that as the sort of stepping stone for unveiling this crazy.
Well, sunlight is the best disinfectant. And to me, that's what you guys do a lot, is put a little sunlight on things that are going on that don't get the press
sort of
that
subtext.
They need.
Yeah.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
And let's. I just want folks to know that you're listening to Positively Revolting, and this morning we have Yes Men Mike with us. If you would like to have a comment or a question about the Yes Men, this is your time. So give us a call at 503-231-8187. You can email your question to positivelyrevolting@gmail.com if you don't want to talk, if it's too early for you, but give us a call, 503-231-8187.
I also want to remind folks, you can, in fact, follow along on Facebook or on Twitter with Positively Revolting. You can find us on Twitter at Positive Revolt or on Facebook, Positively Revolting. I also want to remind people you are listening to KBOO Portland, K200HR Hood River, K282BH Philomath. There, I got them all.
Oh, hey, and you know, if you want to see some of these clips that I'm talking about, you could come to this public talk tonight at 7 o'clock at Shattuck Hall Annex. I'm at PSU.
Portland State.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so. Shattuck Hall is on Southwest Park at Hall Street. For folks not familiar with the PSU campus, the south end of downtown, Southwest Park and Hall.
It'll be fun.
It's the building to the south of Smith Center.
It'll be fun because Yes Men stuff is fun.
Yeah, this is pretty entertaining. Video clips, I have to say, if I don't say so myself.
Well, excellent then. It's always good.
Yep.
So looking at focusing now on climate change and that sort of thing, I'm sort of wanting to know where you are focusing next. Are you staying with climate change for a while? Is it a sort of a fluid
field? Climate change becomes kind of the issue of issues, you know. It's, if we don't fix it, we can't fix a lot of other problems, and so we're focusing on that. But we have this new website called actionswitchboard.net, and the Action Switchboard is all about participating in creative actions across a wide range of issues. And if you propose a project there and work on it through that website, or meet people to work on it through the website, it gets sort of categorized in a goal tree of different actions that contribute to different issues. So, you know, we have like a set of goals around things like police violence. It's very much hot and important issue right now. You know, we had some projects that people did around racial profiling and policing, things like that, that are also super important issues. So the thing is, like, right now, me and Andy, for the most part, because of this movie and because we're going up to the Paris 2015, are really focusing on a lot of things around climate change. But there are lots and lots of creative, crazy projects on other issues that need to be done and that are being done.
So for our listeners, Paris 2015.
Paris 2015 is the next round of United Nations negotiations on climate change. And I think this, so in December in 2015, the UN is meeting in Paris, and activists are trying to, before then, really force governments to come to agreements, to be able to come out of that meeting with some kind of binding agreements on climate change, emissions reductions, you know, real targets, real goals, to try to address the problem before it's too late, if it's not too late already.
Because as opposed to the actions taken recently by a local governing board in, I'm going to say Wisconsin, or was it Minnesota?
No, Wisconsin and Florida.
I remember Florida for sure. Always there. Minnesota, Florida, okay, Wisconsin, Minnesota, that banned the words climate change or global warming in their documents. A couple of different ways to approach, I guess, a problem. One would be the ostrich approach, and one would be satire. There are probably other ways, but I just find it incredibly telling that we are now to the point of having local governments banning talk about really what has to be the most critical issue that we're facing at this time.
Well, that shows a level of desperation, you know. I mean, it's I think that, you know, banning words is kind of comic. I'm sure there'll be some kind of legal challenge there. And, you know, I mean, maybe it's a good idea for a project, actually. I mean, what else could we ban?
Oh, I know. When I heard that first, I went, did the Yes Men do that? Because it was so absurd.
There's so many options for fun words to ban, right? Can you think of any right now? What words would you maybe like to ban? I mean, here in Portland, for example.
Oh, the list goes on.
But let's actually go ahead and talk to Leah, who has phoned us, 503-231-8187, the number to call this morning to join us on the air. We're here with Mike Bonanno from the Yes Men, and this is Positively Revolting. Good morning, Leah.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Leah Gray. I live here in Portland, in East Portland. And I've been getting involved with the Portland Renters Assemblies and looking at strategies for getting our voices out there. We're right now in the middle of actions against Fox Management, and there's lawsuits pending. But what we need is to gather a whole, you know, we need to have some kind of action that gets us out front. And I'm wondering if you guys have contemplated anything around renters, you know, the need for housing, homelessness.
And the issue in Portland that we're looking at right now is definitely we have a huge issue with houselessness, but we also have a huge citywide issue. And this is not just unique to Portland, God knows. But in Portland, we are really feeling a huge citywide push towards gentrification with rents skyrocketing over the last couple of years.
I sit on the Housing Committee with the East Portland Action Plan, and we're very, very working on the gentrification displacement issues. So I'm wondering if something like the Yes Men, an action like that, that we could do ourselves, or you could help us put together, or you could do, you know, a series of these and start off with you guys and then us follow suit, would be wonderful. It's a really great way to galvanize and it's the, you know, issues, and also to do it in a relatively peaceful way.
Thanks very much, Leah.
Thank you.
Yeah, there's we've done a bunch of things around issues like, you know, gentrification and rent increases, things like that. And, you know, there are tons of resources out there and examples throughout history of people protesting in funny ways. I mean, what immediately comes to mind for me is the rent is too damn high guy in New York.
Oh, yeah.
You know, who runs for office and on the rent is too damn high party. And all he says is the rent is too damn high every time he does an interview or is in a debate.
It is his eternal answer to all questions.
Yeah, it's true. And, you know, it kind of sums it up for many people, for pretty much everybody who pays rent. It's really in a place like this where things have just gone through the roof overnight. So, but there are lots and lots of tactics, lots and lots of creative actions that have happened in places like San Francisco, you know, in the late 90s and early 2000s. And you can read about a lot of them on a couple of different websites. There's one website called beautifultrouble.org. I think it's .org. And Beautiful Trouble is also a book. And the book outlines different tactics, different case studies, and different ideas behind these kinds of creative actions. So that's a great resource, Beautiful Trouble.
Great name.
It's really cool resource. Another book to or another website to check out is Actipedia, Actipedia, and Actipedia has a lot of references to projects. And I think it has a bunch of different issue areas too in the drop down menu, and you might find one that's housing related. Lots of creative actions on that. There are also a couple of other really interesting. There's a website called EverydayRebellion.net, and that one's a bit more focused on, you know, global things and also working under oppressive conditions, and also for even more oppressive conditions, you can check out Small Acts of Resistance, which is, it's also a book, but there's a website that goes with it. But all of these resources have, there are things on them that relate to housing and relate to exactly this issue. And what I recommend is to go and look for something that's worked in the past and repeat it. You know, it's the, we're all about copying here, you know, adapting, copying. It's like, if you can imagine, these things are, some of the ways that we work are a bit like just singing an old folk song again, updating it a little bit. That's a good start. But, you know, also, if you list your problem or your idea on the action switchboard, we can try to connect you to other people and advise on the project. The thing is, we can't really do anything ourselves because there's just two of us. And now we're in this phase where we're trying to go around and get the word out about the new website, and we're trying to train other people to do things. And so what we need is for you to join up on the action switchboard, and then we can offer
everybody
you some help.
Can do it.
Yeah.
Everybody can do it.
And people find the action switchboard how?
By going to www.actionswitchboard.net. A-C-T-I-O-N switchboard.net.
Excellent.
Okay, we have bases are loaded here, so let's get some more callers in. John?
Good morning, John.
John, hi. Good morning.
Thank you for having these fine folk on, and I really admire what you do and keep it up. Did you find, at first, was it hard to create monies to for your projects, for all the assets you needed to make things happen?
Yeah, we still have our day jobs. You know, we work as university professors. When we started, Andy was working as a computer programmer too, which was kind of handy because he didn't have to work very much to make a lot of money. I mean, he had full-time jobs, but he didn't do much work at the job. He worked on our stuff. So there's actually a word for that. The French have this word called perruque, which means doing your own work.
I like that.
At work.
Yeah, very.
And
nice.
It always sounds better than French, so.
Yeah. So anyway, he was really accomplished at that perruque.
Perruque.
Yeah, but now, I mean, we both work, we're on the faculty at different universities. I'm at Rensselaer. He's at NYU, at least for the moment, although he will be unemployed next year.
Life of a professor.
Yeah, and the things we do generally aren't that expensive. They're more like the same as, you know, people spend money on vacations. It's a bit like extreme ecotourism, you know? Instead of going to Austria to ski, we go to Austria to like attend a conference in Salzburg and as the WTO. We have raised money over the years, especially to make the movies, because the movies are expensive. They take a ton of money. We go into debt making them. We're actually in quite a bit of debt now from the last movie, because over the years it's been harder to make money from movies. So broadcasters are paying less and less. So the answer is, it's very tricky, but we do crowdfunding. So we use, you know, crowdfunding platforms for these things. We get money from broadcasters. We get money from arts organizations and foundations. and we scrape and beg and steal until we get it done, and then we just try to work our way out of debt after that.
Sounds familiar.
It sounds like the Hollywood community will give you money, maybe even anonymously, and I imagine you collect them as a nonprofit. That would seem to me like a source for kindred spirits.
We do. We
have money to do stuff.
We do run a nonprofit now, and we have we actually have a donate button on our website on yeslab.org. You can donate also through the Action Switchboard, but the Action Switchboard is also meant to be a kind of crowdfunding platform. So you can also go and give money directly to projects on that, which isn't going to us. We basically take the money and hand it over to other people, but whoever's doing the projects. But that's it's a service that we're trying to make a big part of this community that will be the Action Switchboard once it gets going.
All right, John,
thanks for what you do, and keep up the great work. We love you.
Thank you. Bye-bye. All right.
503-231-8187. We still have several people lined up. Let's go ahead and take Victoria. Good morning, Victoria. You're on the air.
Good morning. Hey, my word that you can mess with is grandbabies. Every time I see that, I think, I'm so proud to be part of overpopulation. I got to wear a button, say, my grandbabies are the best, and all this kind of crazy stuff. It just, drives me crazy.
Wow. So you are you forming a group, like grandparents against children or something?
No,
that would be really cool.
Well, that would be good, but I am not a grandparent.
Okay.
I'm one of those people who sees all these people who think that somehow reproducing like rabbits is just really hip, cool, and groovy, and I'm kind of going, no, no, no. So I don't know what you can do with that, but it's just, the other day I was in a big grocery store, like a Fred Meyer, and the woman had her ID badge on it and said, my grandbabies are the best. And I felt like saying, do they ever get over, 18 months old, or do you just chop off their heads at that point? Because not babies
they only
anymore.
Stand babies, yes.
As soon as they become two-year-old toddlers, are they now
off
the table?
I mean, we're very lucky to be living in a place where we can, where we can be concerned about things like that. because I think about, when you mention babies, of course, think about one of the most famous pieces of satire in history, Jonathan Swift's The Modest Proposal, where
right.
he suggested that
right.
the Irish eat their babies to solve the hunger problem. And of course, he is engaging in a critical statement against the English government
right.
that was starving the Irish, that was exporting
right.
food despite the fact
there's plenty of food in Ireland.
That there was enough food in Ireland. So, there are definitely ways of leveraging the lack of or the presence of babies in a great story. And I hope that everybody out there thinks of ways to, adequately use babies. Thank you for your call.
Thanks, Victoria.
Bye.
We got the big hang up on that. Okay. Hello.
Yep.
Are you still there? Are we still
no.
on the air?
We're still on the air. We continue.
And let's just keep going with these callers.
Let's do that. 503-231-8187. If you would like your moment to comment or ask a question, give your... I'm also interested in hearing, because Portland has a proud history of pranksterism. You've been a part of it. But there have been others, and people have continued. And so, if you, in fact, have done something that you want to share with us, I love crowdsourcing ideas. And that is, I think, one of the highest and best uses for Positively Revolting is to help inspire each other.
Well, should we talk about the What the Dickens?
We could maybe do that.
All right.
But let's go ahead and ask others.
Let's ask others.
We've talked about our own pranks. I'm just going to say. Let's go ahead and hear from you, dear listeners, 503-231-8187. Also, to remind you, you can follow along in the Twitterverse at Positive Revolt or Facebook, Positively Revolting.
And if you can't call in with your questions, you can ask me tonight at Shattuck
That's
Hall
correct.
Annex
That is correct.
At PSU at 7 o'clock. So come with
come
your
on, come on.
Hardest and weirdest questions I haven't heard before. See Shattuck Hall Annex at PSU at 7 o'clock. Thank you.
Excellent. Good morning, Jack. You're on the air, Jack.
Yes, thank you. I'd love to come and hear you tonight, but since I'm in the entertainment industry too, I'm working tonight.
Yes.
Cool. Well, congratulations on working in the entertainment industry.
Well, thank goodness I got a job tonight. I mean, it's not every night, but anyway, what I'd like to know is how difficult is it to figure a strategy where you're going to actually impersonate somebody or some group that has some prominence that is going to impress a conference or whatever, wherever you show up, and get away with it? And have you ever been foiled? That is to say, have you ever been, got the hook before you could actually execute the ruse? It seems to me that this would be one of the most difficult things in what you do, is to figure out how are we really going to pull this off and fool all these people long enough to, you know, get it done.
Well, actually, it's surprisingly enough, it's not very hard. Once somebody believes that you are, let's say, from the World Trade Organization.
But how do you get to that stage?
You tell them.
You have to have a lot of gall. the way we
started out doing it was that we had fake websites that looked like the WTOs. They were funny, but people didn't read them. So they would send an email thinking they were sending it to the WTO. And so when we emailed back and said we were, the deal was done. They believed we were. That was all it took. And if you go through the trouble of showing up, then, you know, they think they've written to the WTO. So it's the confidence game kind of builds slowly. And this is, you know, an age-old trick that people usually use for swindling, not usually for comedy or for commentary, social commentary. And that's why all the laws around this kind of thing are all about fraud. They're all about people trying to steal money. You impersonate somebody so that you can go and, like, you know, get the old lady's house, or, you know, that kind of thing, or empty someone's bank account. But those are not our goals. And so what we do is not illegal. Our goals are to make social commentary.
Not yet.
So we, you know, basically we've ended up, it's been pretty easy. You know, the fake websites don't really work very much anymore because they're identified in search engines. But there are other ways of getting into conferences. You know, you can email the conference organizers. There are many, many different tactics that one can use. What the hackers would call social engineering. This is convincing somebody, or basically forcing the door open, getting in. You know, and most of the way this is things like passwords and things
the
like that are stolen.
The emperor's new clothes, I always think of. You guys, and with sales, belief is really important. It's when people start believing you, they don't want to change.
Yeah. It turns out to not be, that
Well, it
hard.
Looks like it's the prep work. I mean, in your movies, when I've watched them before, that there's an awful lot of prep work. Well, a lot of it involves haircuts and suits, I know, but
that's the easy part. I mean, part of it is also just researching, you know, knowing who you're talking to, knowing what you're supposed to be saying, and then fitting whatever you're doing into that framework. So there's research. There's a research component.
Yeah,
but
I'm sure you don't want to talk about your failures, but failures are often more instructive than successes. Did you? Were there any times when it didn't happen? I mean, when you got booted before you actually got to the stage?
Well, not so much that we got booted before we got to the stage, but we've gotten booted, you know, just after or just before the end of something. And one of those examples is in our second movie, The Yes Men Fix the World, where we get kicked out of an oil conference. So, you know, in general, we haven't been discovered beforehand, although every time we do it, we think we have at some point, because the way your paranoia always kind of works its magic on you, no matter how much experience you have. And when somebody says something that seems to indicate that they know you're not who you say you are, then you suddenly think the gig is up. And it always happens. You always construct your own reality, you know, based on what people say, and think that, you know, that they're onto you.
Well, and you're this far from that always anyway.
Yeah.
That sounds like a better movie, actually.
Well, there's
the whole process and your engagement and all of this, you know, back and forth with your team there. How are we going to achieve this?
You know? Well, that is in our new movie actually has at least one major failure in it. That's pretty fun to watch. It's major in that it may be the largest scale production that we ever did, which, you know, it involves a life-size polar bear. Costume that's very realistic, a large barge with a marching band on it, a representative from Shell and Gazprom, and it's
Cecil B. DeMille, I tell you.
It's crazy. It's a bit crazy. Yeah, it's a bit crazy, and of course it's a colossal failure too, in part because, you know, it's just funny to watch it unravel. I'll put it that way.
Thank you. I look forward to seeing it.
Thanks very much. 503-231-8187, the number to call if you would like to join us on the air. I wanted to just, emphasize the incredible amount of nerve you have. Every time I check out what you've done at a news conference, direct confrontation with officials, there is the trailer from The Yes Men Are Revolting, where Andy is from the Chamber of Commerce and is confronted by a worker from the Chamber of Commerce demanding a business card, as if the business card somehow or another is the ultimate symbol of legitimacy and proof. And instead of getting any kind of ruffled, I mean, you know, I always love pranks. I've done pranks. Cool. But at some point, I know I get scared, right? I get, oh my God, this is going to be a confrontation, and I start shaking, whatever. Cool as a cucumber says, can I have your business card? Where's your... And it becomes this wonderful standoff, and I just got to say, that nerve. How do you have that nerve? Like, it's unfathomable to me to stay that calm and that collected under those circumstances.
I don't think that, you know, weirdly, I don't think you really have a choice, you know? It's like, what else are you going to do?
I know. Okay. He's not going to go, and run out of the room.
Yeah.
Myself, I would faint. I don't know. But
that would be good. The thing is, like, that would be good. Like, anything that you do in that circumstance is funny and entertaining, because we're actually not really traditional comedians in that we don't tell jokes. We don't get up there, and we're not very funny people. What's funny is the context that we end up in, and then it's really funny. And what the funniest thing is to see people's reactions too, you know? So if he had run off screaming, it would have been really funny to not necessarily to watch him run off screaming, but to watch the looks on people's faces when that happened, you know, and then to see what Eric Wolfschlegel, the, you know, former head of PR for the Chamber of Commerce, who had burst into the room to see what he did as a result. Like, what would he do then? I don't know. Well, as it is, this reaction is really funny to watch.
Well, to me, part of that is because Andy stayed so cool.
Mm.
That he could do nothing but, the other guy could do nothing but melt down.
The words unflappable come to mind when...
he didn't give up his place at the podium.
He did not.
That's for sure.
Nor did he actually whip out a business card. He just stayed focused.
Well, you know, the funny part of that story, and often what's funny is that we often have business cards, but they don't look very good. So then when somebody asks for one, you think, oh, should I give the business card or not? Because it's kind of a little bit like homemade, you know?
It has the Vistaprint logo.
We've had moments where people have demanded a business card. And then even though, like, Andy had business cards in his pocket, he still didn't give them the card, which is weird because... It's funny what a business card can do. I mean, once you hand the business card over, they're like, oh, okay, you've got a business card. I guess you're real.
I know. it confers legitimacy in a way that few other things do. Mm. For only $5.99 it's a wacky thing our world is. So again, tonight, for people that want to hear more and find out more about what you do, you are speaking at PSU. Go ahead and talk about that a little bit more.
Well, I'll be showing, you know, show and tell, you know. I'll have some I'll have some video clips never before seen by human eyes.
All right.
Which I will present. Some funny stuff. I'll take requests. I'll answer questions. Much like we're doing now, only then I'm going to reveal the secrets. The deep, dark secrets.
Okay, I see.
Yeah.
Well, that is intriguing.
So, yeah, it should be fun. It'll be fun. And, you know, there'll be other people there, I think. I hope. I hope this isn't a prank, right?
Well, show up and find out. Is it a prank at PSU at 7 p.m. at Shattuck Hall? Are the yes men there? Is it a prank? What will be going on?
Yeah. And again, Shattuck Hall is on Southwest Park at Hall Street, south of Smith Memorial.
That's
Center.
Good. I never know where anything is there.
I used to go there. It was a long time ago. Just a little historical context, because I'm a huge fan of the Society of the Spectacle and Guy Debord's work, and was wondering if you could talk a little bit, if you find relation between what the Situationist International movement and what you do now.
Yeah, we found inspiration from the Situationists, and, they were doing amazing things, and they still, I guess there are people who call themselves Situationists who still are. We sometimes use that French word détournement to describe what we're doing. I mean, like taking a thing out of one aesthetic context and placing it into another to reveal something about the original thing. You know, it's kind of, so all of that is, it's pretty inspiring and great to look at, but we have, I guess, now been informed by hundreds of different movements and groups that have been doing creative projects often like that. I mean, interesting thing about the Situationists is that I think that they came at a moment when we started to really remember things better. You know, so more of the stories were mediated, more of the stories were written about. But these types of interventionist practices have been going out, as far as we can tell, throughout history in basically every culture. And in fact, in the myths of almost every culture, there are these trickster characters who, you know, whether it's European cultures or, you know, indigenous cultures here in North America, South America, the characters who played these kinds of roles, who would, hold a mirror up to culture, who would change shapes, who would impersonate other creatures, who would, you know, and there was always a lesson to be learned in those stories. And so, you know, I think that it's just interesting now to reflect that, on what we know and what we don't know. And yes, we were totally inspired by the Situationists, totally inspired by a bunch of other stuff going on in the 60s that, you know, is still kind of accessible to us. But I recently discovered this whole crazy stuff that was going on around the anarchist movement in the 1890s that hardly any documentation exists of, you know, but there was tons of humor, tons of mischief, very strange and funny interventions and performances going on, but, you know, a lot less media, a lot less, recording and reproduction of that material.
Well, and they were so demonized by what media there was at that particular time, which was papers, and that was about it, newspapers.
And with that, we are just about out of time. Again, tonight, Shattuck Hall, Mike will be speaking to you.
Yes.
If you come.
Yes.
And that's at come. 7 o'clock,
and
Shattuck Hall.
I'm going to show you some never-before-seen video clips.
And that's at PSU tonight.
Thanks so much for having me on.
Absolutely.
I've always loved KBOO, you know, here in the 80s, and it's been with me ever since.
Well, thanks.
And we are delighted to have you on once again. We had you on about 4 years ago, but you had to speak to us on a cell phone from a stairwell at your food co-op.
It was great. You were loading,
you were loading turkeys.
But
right,
it was Thanksgiving, so it was appropriate.
Oh, God. Yeah. Well, since then, I got kicked out of the food co-op for not being able to fulfill my shifts. So it's a good memory, but, you know, bittersweet memory.
Oh. Well, we're happy that you're able to take time out of your schedule to actually be with us this morning in the studio. We're delighted to have this opportunity. And again, for folks wanting to play along at home, you can follow along on Facebook, Positively Revolting, like our page, and you know, we do try to continue this conversation off the air throughout the whole week, because once a week is not enough. With that, please do stay tuned to KABU, your very own community radio station. We'll be back again next week.
What would you have instead? What would you have instead? What would you have instead?
This is it.
There comes a time when every second, every day, when every action, every thought will tell the world how you cast your vote.
One, two, ready, go!
Tune in to KABU Monday, April 27th through Friday, May 2nd from noon to 4, and Saturday and Sunday, May 2nd and 3rd from noon to 5 p.m. to hear our live broadcast from the New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Festival, brought to you by our friends and colleagues at WWOZ in New Orleans. We'll have access to five stages of fantastic traditional and contemporary New Orleans jazz and blues, brass bands, and interviews and commentary by the best that WWOZ has to offer. That's the New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Festival, starting Monday, April 27th. The weekdays, we'll broadcast it from noon to 4 p.m., and Saturday and Sunday, May 2nd and 3rd, we'll broadcast the festival from noon to 5 p.m., here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
Portland School Board elections are May 19th. What are the candidates saying?
Hi, I'm Mike Rosen, and I'm a Portland Public Schools parent. I would describe myself as a watchdog and a volunteer of 15 years. I'm currently running unopposed for Portland School Board Zone 7, and I hope that I'll be able to significantly alter the culture of the board.